Going Linux, episode 453, Listener Feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want to send us feedback, our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com, and our voicemail line is 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry.
How you doing?
I am great. I know you just got back from vacation.
Hope
you had a good time.
It was a glorious, blissful vacation. My kind of vacation. Restful.
Nice. I worked.
Yeah, absolutely. You worked, yes. Well, what else have you been doing besides work? I know you've been doing other stuff.
I have. I installed Arch, vanilla Arch, and
okay.
I am very pleased with it. They have an installer script, installer script is what they call it, and it brings up a text. Kind of wizard that you kind of fill out, and it's really simple. You just go down the steps, and it installed everything. Lean, mean. I've always been running, for the most part, when I was in the one Arch, the Manjaro, but I wanted to see what the difference was. And I'm glad I did. I really see, a better performance, and there's nothing that I don't want on the machine. It's really just exactly how I want it. So that's kind of nice.
That is good. Runs faster, runs better, runs leaner. And what more can you ask? That's great.
Oh, I can ask.
Oh, yeah. Okay, what else can you ask?
I can finally ask my new internet providers. No, I got a new internet provider.
Okay.
Finally.
All right. Yeah, no more Pony Express speeds, right?
So I was, it was like 3 down and 1.5 up. That's how bad it is out here, or was.
Yeah, that's high speed internet for you.
Yeah, dial up. So, as you know, that would be difficult. So, Verizon finally moved their sell your home internet out. And I, after waiting and being on the wait list for 5 years, I finally got the magic box. And
okay. So
now it's 15 megs up and 100 down.
Whoa, what an improvement.
And at one-third the cost. My old internet provider, who shall go unnamed because they were really sticking it to me and everybody else in this area, was charging right at $119 for that speed.
Okay.
I only pay $45 now.
All right. Well, they deserve to be named, so who are they, and who's the new one?
They were through the power company that I get my power from, and it's, I'll have to look it up, and I'll put it in the show notes if I think about it. I can't remember, because it's billed through them, but they're based out of Florida.
Okay.
They... service was down a lot. Just wasn't a good thing. So I've been.
Yeah, well, you can't blame them. They had to get all those internet bits all the way from Florida over to New Mexico. So, you know, it takes a toll.
Golly, if you hadn't asked me, I could have told you who they were. But
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's probably a local power company that only folks in New Mexico know about.
Yeah, it is. It's, we won't go there.
Verizon. Okay. So I know Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile all have, here we are speaking in U.S. terms again, but all three of them have new boxes that they provide for cellular connection, which is not, you know, not the same as fiber, but it's certainly better than what you've been getting. And certainly by the speeds that you're seeing, it's more than adequate. So easy setup?
Oh, yeah. Super easy. But it's not as slow. It's not, I know it's not fiber speeds, but
right.
Yeah, it's 5G ultra wide is what I'm getting.
Yeah. And 5G is better than we were getting when we started this podcast from cable companies and everything else. So this is great.
This is, it's been a game changer because it's so nice to actually have a connection that, you know, I don't have to sit there and wait 5 days to download an ISO, you know, so, or upload the show, which would take, 30 minutes. And now it would just take hardly anything. So, it's been working well, but since we're calling out the power company, they need to get their act together. I have lost power 2 days in a row because of these high winds. Okay. Enough said.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Well, hopefully you maintain power enough to record this podcast.
Yes.
We'll find out.
Yes. If we don't and I disappear, then you'll never know.
Yeah. We'll record it again some other time. But okay. So new internet provider, new operating system. New operating system is not unusual for you. You jump around a lot, but what the heck happened to Nix?
Oh, I still have Nix running. On my other machine, I have pretty much learned what I wanted to know about it, and I really don't have time to get into flakes and all that other stuff that's required to really get the most use out of it. It's okay if you're not doing a lot of changes, but anytime you have to make a change, you have to go in, do the config file, rebuild the system, and then reboot the computer. I mean, just to add one program. It's a great operating system. I like the declarative nature of it. But my new sweetheart right now is Arch. I've been running it for about 3 weeks and it has not given me any troubles. So I know. I'm in love with Arch, okay? So
yeah.
Okay, just so everybody knows, I would not recommend this for a brand new user unless you had you were familiar with the command line. But if you're a moderate to more experienced user, I would say if you want a challenge, you don't have to, give it a whirl, because it's interesting to see how different things work. And I think I've run the gamut, from Fedora to Ubuntu to Arch to even Slackware.
Yeah, the thing I think that was holding many people back from trying Arch was the lack of an installer. You had to go through some hoops, as I understand it, to get it installed. Probably for an experienced Linux user, nothing too taxing, but for somebody new to Linux, Arch was not, without an installer, was not at all recommended, even for a moderate user. But it sounds now that there is, and they've had this text-based installer for a while, it sounds like it's much more, moved up the ladder a little bit.
I didn't have any issues with it, but then again, you know, I've installed Linux and run Linux for years, but nothing in there that is confusing or anything. They have a couple different YouTube videos on it if you want to see how it works. But like I said, I did when I first tried it is I put it in a virtual machine, make sure everything worked. And then, once I had it running and everything, I went ahead and, put it on bare metal. So that's the way I would recommend to any thing that you're learning as far as Linux is to use a virtual machine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good way to test mm-hmm. things out, that's for sure. And speaking of testing things out, in our last episode, you had mentioned that you paid for license for Zorin OS, and we were talking about possibly a giveaway to one of our listeners if Zorin was okay with us transferring the license. How did that go?
I have not seen email. Then again, I might have missed it. I did send it, but I'll have to dig through and see if they replied. It's been kind of on the back burner with all my jumping around and stuff, but
yeah,
I don't see why they would have a problem with it. But
we did that once before, yeah. I think, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, I didn't buy that one; they had given it to me.
Ah, right. Okay.
And for a review, and so I don't see what the difference would be. I paid them money; they got their money, and I'm not going to run it. So why, you know, let someone else use it and enjoy it. They've already got an update out for it that seems to have made things a little better. So, hey.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, well, right. We'll wait until next time to get a final answer on that one. Yeah, so shall we get started on our listener feedback?
Sure.
Okay, we've got a few emails, starting with David. He starts us off by tipping us off to a vulnerability with open source software program called XZUtils, or as he would say, XZUtils. Hi guys, by addressing you this way, I don't show favoritism of Larry over Bill. I mean Bill over Larry. I mean, I don't show favoritism for either of you. Thanks, David. A quick note from your number one expat Canadian fan in Israel, I think. Remember me? Yes, we do remember you, David. I thought this article may be of interest. It certainly scares me. Any comments? Bestest David. We'll have a link to the article. And this article has actually been covered by a number of other Linux podcasts, but we should at least discuss it a little bit because we do have new users to Linux on our podcast as listeners, and they may not have heard this, or they may have heard some dire rumors about Linux being torn apart or something. I don't know what, but we'll let you read the article for yourself. It's actually from Reuters, and you should be able to just click through on the link without any paywall or anything to read it. But essentially, and you can elaborate on this a little bit, Bill, but bad actor inserted some malware into a often used, under certain circumstances, utility for Linux, but did an awful lot of work to try to make it work, because it's kind of one of those, you have to have the dominoes exactly in the right order for it all to work. But a researcher who works for Microsoft, apparently, in San Francisco, had found this, researched it, and by now, all Linux distributions have, if you're up to date on all your updates, have taken care of any vulnerability. And there's nothing to worry about now, other than if you're running an old version of Linux, this might hit you if you have all of the right things exactly right for the vulnerability to attack. So anyway, that's my summarization of a very long story with a lot of turns and twists, but a happy ending.
Yeah, so basically we're not going to, you know, beat this one to death because everybody else has. Software is software, whether it's open source or closed. It always has a chance to have a bug or an exploit that's programmed into it. The good news is, since it's an open or use open source, we have a lot of eyes and a lot of people who can actually look at that source and find what's going on. And that's exactly what happened with this.
And fix it.
And fix it. Yeah, is bad. But again, nothing is 100%. And as long as you make sure that you know where you're getting your packages, whether it be FlatHub or SnapCraft or from the repositories, you know, you should be fine. Keep your computer up to date. Make sure you're installing the security, and just do your best. And just stay, you know, don't use a crypto wallet or anything like that. You know,
yeah.
That's a thing with the snaps. They had some problems with the snap store. So, yeah, it yep. seems like as Linux is getting more and more popular and people are moving to it and will continue to move to it, I think you're going to see where there's going to be more bad actors trying to, you know, work on exploits. And the funny thing about this, it's not really funny, but they went to a lot of work. And they use social engineering for the original dev. And I mean, it's just, if you read the whole, listen to the whole story of how this went about, they really worked hard. So, you know, good for the developers that have already addressed it and have reverted back changes. And just remember, that's one of the strengths of open source. You can always look at the code and see what's being done.
Yeah. And there are people who do that with the skills to fix it. And with operating systems from Microsoft or Apple or Google, you don't know, A, whether they've used these utilities, and it's a possibility they have. It's open source. Anybody can use them. And you don't know whether they fix them, because unless they announce it, and I haven't heard any of those three announce anything about this, you don't know whether it's fixed. So anyway, advantages of switching to Linux.
Yeah, because the wake-up call to stay vigilant, that's a good word. And I think that's about all we can add to it, because I really don't have the whole tech chops to go in depth and tell you what exactly was changed. I know it was, you know, it was part of systemd, and it, you know, it was, it's something I'm not a coder, so I'm not going to make any further comments on it.
Yeah, and unless you're an open source or Linux developer, it really doesn't matter. What really matters is problem identified, problem affixed, problem solved, problem behind us.
So, moving on, we got another email from Stephen. Stephen in the UK says that he's been struggling to listen. He said, I have been having issues for a while getting your podcast on my iPhone. Haven't tried the computer, as I always listen on the move, using Pocket Casts on iOS 17.4. So, I have an iPhone, and I just use the podcast app that what comes with the phone, and I haven't had an issue. So maybe I don't know. You got any ideas? Because I don't know anything about Pocket Cast.
Well, I know Pocket Cast is a popular podcast receiving software. And for iOS as an operating system, I don't know whether it's available for Android or any other phone operating system, but I haven't heard of any issues with it. I also haven't heard of any issues with our podcast being listenable other than my microphone over the past little while. And I've switched back to from the microphone that was giving me some problems to a better microphone. This is my 15-plus-year-old original mic, and it should be back to normal now. But, yeah, other than that, I haven't heard of any problem with our podcast specifically. So I am thinking that it might be a bad copy of the podcast receiving software that you've got, Pocket Casts. Have you tried uninstalling Pocket Cast and reinstalling it? Or have you tried another app? Like Bill, I have on my iPhone the Apple Podcasts app. And for the most part, when dealing with Apple, unlike open source, which encourages you to experiment around, Apple discourages you from installing other things other than their software. And their software seems to work best. So all else failing, try the app from Apple that gives you podcasts. That would be the podcast app.
Yeah, and if any of our listeners have any suggestions that they can throw Stephen's way, please let us know and we'll pass it on.
Yep, absolutely, especially if you use Pocket Cast.
Yes. So we have another email from a listener outside the U.S. And is looking for help about from a Linux privacy guru. Note, Parrot mentioned in this message is an operating system for hackers. I mean, security specialists. And I won't read the whole thing because some of it is, it would
code.
Yeah. But I did want to let you know that he says, hi, I need your help trying to get my VirtualBox 7.0.14 to work. I've just updated VirtualBox from 6.1.50 and now I can't access my virtual machines that I had in 6.1.50. Could you help me with this? I can pay cash via mail if you do. This is super urgent. I am on Parrot OS. And then he sends this, basically it's like a log file of what exactly it is, you know. It says Parrot OS version 5.1, version, you know, code name ARA, ID Parrot, ID like Debian, and then it goes the home URL, support URL, and bug URL. And he says, thank you.
Yeah, and we'll have those URLs in in the show notes if you're interested in Parrot OS or Parrot security and looking at that. But first of all, an email from somebody who seems to be a hacker offering to pay cash, not giving their name, and looking for, quote, help might be a little suspicious, but in the off chance that this is legitimate, I'm not sure we can really offer too much help. First of all, you said it was urgent, and it's probably been a month since you sent us the email, so hopefully you've got it fixed by now. Yeah, super urgent, and sending us emails asking for help is not a fast way to get your help. So let's just put it that way. We do read the emails, and we try to address them, and we address them, if not by email, certainly on the show. And unfortunately, neither of us use Parrot OS. In fact, before you sent this, I hadn't even heard of it. And we really can't help you much.
And just another little pro tip. How about letting us know what your name is? So we don't, just thinking, you know, just spitballing there.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah, a name would go a long way, and super urgent and offering cash usually is
scammer bait.
Yeah, scammer bait. So anyway, that being said, let's move on.
Let's move on. So Jesper comments on our audio. Hello, friends. First, I want to say that I am super happy with your podcast, and I have a question for you. I don't hear very well and occasionally find it difficult to adjust my volume so that it fits, since you obviously have two wildly different microphones. One is bass-like and muffled. The other is very thin and low. Would you be so kind as to try to regulate it a little? Regards, Jesper from Denmark. Well, Jesper, that's on me. I did mention that I switched back to the better microphone. I don't know which microphone you were having trouble hearing because it was low, and which one low in volume and which one was muffled. I can't really tell from your email, but let me assure you, and I have by email, that we are taking some steps to improve that. I'm doing a little more processing on both Bill's and my audio, and switching to the better microphone will help as well for my side. And it's possible that, you know, with a better operating system on Bill's part and faster internet speed, I don't know what that has to do with a pre-recorded audio signal, but you can cross your fingers and hope. Let us know if it's improved and if you can hear us better now.
Yeah, I might have to end up getting a newer mic. I think the one that's tinny and low might be me, but we appreciate the feedback, Jasper, we'll work on it.
Yeah, we will. But give us some feedback so we know whether we're headed in the right direction.
So George from Tulsa wrote this. Hey guys, enjoyed the 2023 wrap. Bill, you did a good job of selecting some interesting topics new to me. Larry seemed bemused that Mastodon uses Toot as its equivalent for tweets, though would that be X now? Sadly, Mastodon has officially retired the Toot, its version of the tweet. Anyway, here's a Toot for you. And a charming short video with sound effects.
We'll put the links to those in the show notes for those interested in listening to the tooting elephant and the baby elephant. And it's cute.
Yeah, it says, baby elephant parents make a happy noise while in the river. Toodaloo. Gee. Thanks, George. That's fun.
And George also wrote about episode 449 listener feedback. And he says, no exclamatories at Bill. Hey, mostly Bill, but also Larry. One, AntennaPod. That's another podcast receiving software. For some reason, possibly related to the date of my installation, I simply didn't see going Linux 449 from December 18th, 2023, until hiding from yesterday, 33 degrees Fahrenheit with wind chill minus 17 Fahrenheit, I found it. AntennaPod user tip. It seems the subscription view is more reliable than the episode view because that's where I found unplayed 449. But then only after forcing an update of the subscription view. Yeah, so George, podcast receiving software is undergoing a lot of changes, and I don't recall whether AntennaPod is one of the newer ones that have received all the ability to send sats to folks or not, but you might want to try another one if it's not fixed. Any comments on that before we move on to his number two?
You never have to worry about sending us any sats, okay?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, okay. Okay, number two. Hey, Bill, at least I got your attention with all those exclamation points. I checked out Ventoy after your positive recommendation. Sounds a lot better than the way I've tested ISOs with more than 20 USB 3.0 labeled thumb drives gathering dust in a, quote, mega gulp cup. A couple of features of Ventoy that should be useful. It is possible to enable persistence on the Ventoy drive to enable test ISOs to write data that will survive shutting down the last test. Especially useful by using the Ventoy persistence plugin. Data saved by one ISO can be shared with others on the Ventoy drive. And he provides a link to the information about the persistence. And he continues. Ventoy has the ability to verify the checksum of ISOs, an important step to protect yourself from an ISO hacker that has modified with backdoors or other malware. As I read the Ventoy checksum instructions, the process does require users to download the checksum file from the distro source and place it on the Ventoy drive in the correct format. And another link to the article on that. If you're serious about Ventoy, give some thought to running on an external SATA SSD via a SATA to USB adapter. Faster, larger, and more write cycles than standard thumb drives. Even better if your computer has empty SATA or NVMe slots, internal SSDs should let Ventoy fly. Point number three, about DistroC, the online site for testing Linux distros. Before DistroC, there was DistroTest, and that's what I used to test drive the highly promoted Mac-like elementary OS, and realized it doesn't include or provide an option to install any Office productivity suite. That was enough for me, and saved downloading its 2.9 gigabyte ISO to test. DistroC offers the same functionality, though the demo does not provide access to elementary's store with apps designed for Mac-like coherence with its Pantheon desktop. Those can be found at appcenter.elementary.io. There is a menu option to create a virtual machine install on DistroC's server. I didn't test that. It is possible. Doing so would enable internet connectivity to view Elementary App Store from within Elementary. DistroC's speed varies. Around noon on Sunday, January 14th, I started at number 9 in the queue and waited about 5 minutes. But 5:30 p.m., I was number 1 and the Elementary demos started right up. Without that 2.9 gigabyte bandwidth, munching download. Since most Linux distros are Ubuntu-based, what differentiates them is not how they work, but their graphical user interfaces. If you've heard great things about a different Ubuntu flavor, they're all Ubuntu with different look and feel. Take them for a test drive on DistroC. Satisfy your curiosity, save a lot of time and bandwidth. Like what you see? Download an ISO and spend some quality time testing it with Ventoy. You've used Ventoy, haven't you, Bill?
Yes, I have. I like it. I just redid my Ventoy stick. I bought a 128 gigabyte thumb drive.
Ah, good. I bet you got a better price than I did just after they came out.
I did.
But it's handy to have one that big.
Yeah, it is because not only can you do I use it for storing ISOs for tests, whatever, but I also use it to store files or when I was doing the Nix config. So I used it for that and it works fine. I mean, it's not an ISO, it just ignores it. But I've put backgrounds I wanted to keep or pictures I wanted or, passwords or how I want something set up. So I use that stick for, manual on how I want to get things installed, what the password is, et cetera, et cetera. But I can tell you, I will not be, testing any other distros out, for a little while. I'm staying on Arch.
Okay. All right.
We'll see how long that lasts, right?
Right. Exactly. So what you're saying is you use Arch, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And, if you're new to Linux, that's
a meme.
Yes, it is a meme. Just look it up. Number four on George's email, Veracrypt. I guess I thought it was widely known that Veracrypt containers are cross-platform from the Veracrypt FAQ. Will I be able to mount my Veracrypt volume container on any computer? Yes, Veracrypt volumes are independent of the operating system. You will be able to mount your Veracrypt volume on any computer on which you can run Veracrypt. And that link to that FAQ entry is provided in the show notes. He wraps it up by saying, hence, XFAT is the best formatting option for cross-platform removable drives to support Veracrypt. No overhead or drive durability loss due to journaling. Effectively, no file size limit, compatible with all modern versions of Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, and possibly iOS. And a link to the Wikipedia article on the XFAT drive format.
Yeah.
For more information. I think there is a limit on file size, but for most users, that's probably not something you'd need to worry about unless you're storing big ISOs or big files of stuff.
If you're storing big ISOs, you definitely are not going to want to use XFAT. You want to use, if the bare minimum is the EXT4. Have something with a modern journaling system. But, he does have a point. So can the kernel, is the NTFS file system now in the kernel? That are we able to create an NTFS partition if you need it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you can. So NTFS would be certainly much more compatible with Windows.
Yes.
Than EXT4, but I understand Windows can read EXT4 now.
Oh, can it?
So, okay. But you can't write to it, is what I understand. Uh-huh. So XFAT is certainly the most compatible because you can read and write from Windows, Mac, or Linux to XFAT. But it has the smallest size limit. NTFS increased the size limit, but there is still a limit. And if you are just using Linux, there are much better file formats that are native to Linux that you can use. But if you do need to be cross-platform with your files, and you are exchanging them physically from a hard drive or storing them somewhere that other people can get to them as opposed to sending them through the internet, the file format will make a difference and you want to be as compatible as possible.
Yep.
So thank you, George. That was a longish email with a lot of links. Yeah, a lot of information, a lot of good stuff. So thanks again for that, as always. And George, longtime listener, David, longtime listener, thank you for all you do and your support for our podcast for this long time and everyone else. So I know we're going into the summer soon. We're still in spring as record this, but summer kind of tapers off a little bit. Not as much as Christmas time, the end of the year, but as people go on vacation, for the summer, they listen a lot, but don't respond a lot. So we may or may not get a lot of listener feedback. But so far, in the 15 plus years we've been doing this, we've had enough email to have an all feedback show every other show. So hopefully we'll be able to keep that up.
Yeah, and if not, we will adapt.
Yes, we will. So we'll see. We'll see. And hopefully we'll be able to put out more frequent episodes as time goes on. Between Bill and my personal life and business life and everything else going
new
on
jobs.
In the world. Yeah, exactly. It's been a little difficult to record, but at least we've gotten one out a month, and we apologize for not having them more frequently. We try to have two episodes a month. We'll try to get back to that. I know some people want us to be more frequent than that, but I don't think we're ever going to get there.
Yeah. We can try.
Yeah, we'll try. It's aspirational. That's
yes.
For sure. So again, thank you all our listeners, and please keep the emails and voicemails and everything else coming that allows us to answer your questions on our listener feedback episodes. And, get answers from the rest of our listeners in many cases as well. So
I'm going to give a shout out to the Jasper who wrote us in with that feedback. Thank you very much, Jasper, for that feedback. And please let us know if you notice any changes for the better or worst.
Yes, exactly. Okay, and I think that wraps it up for today.
Yes.
So our next episode will be as much of a surprise to you as it is to us, because we haven't written it yet. But until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.